your $1 million in the dot-com startup arena. And I think that's so funny, and it's apropos. It's now, I mean, gosh, that seems like such a little amount of money in that world. And today, I think it's overcrowded to the extent that it's not even what you would aspire to. You just want to go work for one of those companies. The people coming up now aren't even thinking that way. I don't think the pressure's there. They just want to, like, find one of those places that maybe will pay them, and on. Or maybe they, you know, want to create something that's even more massive and costly. And to what end? It basically is another behemoth of a tech company that does nothing and either spies or, you know, ruins tech for people. I mean, whatever it does, it does. And, you know, these are ideas that you wouldn't normally hear. I mean, people talk about tech in passing so easily. We aren't as critical. We're not conditioned to be critical of the structure of some of these industries and the kind of mediated world that we are navigating with all of these new tools and stuff. We have the promise of such easy information and ease of so many things, but the ramifications, the implications, the sheer greed at play behind it and the impact that greed is having, that stuff matters. And you're not going to hear that on like your commercial stations, the kind of evening news that Jello was talking about. That's not popular. And even in the tech world, I think we would have a hard time because we wouldn't be talking venture capital numbers. We wouldn't be talking about which business we started this week and how our serial entrepreneurship is going and our portfolio this and that and the other thing. You know, we wouldn't do well in those circles either. That's what this is about. This is community broadcast. We can talk about whatever we want here. And we're here opening these things up. We're here to learn too. We're by all means not experts. I've been meaning to say this for years. In case you haven't checked, like, we're not experts. We are here to learn. We're here to analyze this stuff. We go over it. We're familiar, and we are absolutely passionate and interested in this area. But we depend as much on listeners and on the community around us, this special community here, the radio station and beyond, to support us and to challenge us, maybe provide us with corrections. You can do that. Hey, OTH@2600.com. That's where you write. You write a letter. You can write us an email. We'll play a file if it's clean. We'll play something if you observe something you recorded. Or we've done all kinds of things like that in the past, and we really do benefit from this community. So I just want to get that out. That this really does matter. This is important stuff, and what Bernie's talking about is no joke. It's a special thing to have this transmitter and this station going the way it is. And, gosh, we've got a lot to hope for in the future.
Absolutely. Well said, Kyle. And you are listening to WBAI New York. It's just after 8 o'clock. Personal Computer Show is not on tonight, unfortunately. Well, the fortunate part is that we're on. We're on for another hour, and we're going to bring you a few more excerpts of talks from the Hope Conference. Kyle, you got something else?
Should I get off the table now?
Yeah, you can sit back down. Okay. Absolutely. Thank you. We are going to go now to the year of 2012. That's when Hope Number 9 took place. Now, this is particularly interesting, and as we've been saying, we're offering a special a collection tonight of all of our keynote addresses that have taken place at Hope Conferences throughout the years. For a pledge of $50, you'll get a bunch of DVDs. For a pledge of $75, you'll get a thumb drive with all of the DVD quality files on them that you can copy and spread around to your heart's content. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. And Mike, the secret words to say to the people to not confuse them, what were they again?
It is the Hope Archive. Sorry, I've lost my email.
We're all confused here.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
It's the Hope Archives thumb drive or the Hope Archives DVD collection.
Yeah.
212-209-2950.
If you say the Hope Archives, that should pretty much trigger.
You think so?
Yeah, I hope so. 212-209-2950. That's our phone number. Now, what we're going to do is go to a couple of excerpts, actually, from William Binney's talk. Now, William Binney was an NSA analyst who turned into an NSA whistleblower. Keep in mind, this was before Edward Snowden appeared on the scene. And it was particularly interesting because Laura Poitras was there. Remember
she
this,
was.
Kyle?
Yeah,
we met Binney at the train station, at Penn Station, and we all escorted him up to the hotel before his talk. And the things he was saying, they seemed unbelievable at the time. There, he was talking about the NSA spying domestically on Americans, and the numbers he was giving out just seemed so incredible, the amount of data. And I remember the mass media just basically brushing this off, not taking it seriously, even though this guy had been raided and harassed by the authorities himself for daring to release this information and to actually share with people that had every right to know what the NSA was really up to. And it wasn't until Edward Snowden came on the scene a year or so later that people really started to wake up. But this is a good example of how the speakers at Hope conferences were ahead of the game and are courageous, too. A lot of them have such guts to come out and speak out against what are really, really powerful adversaries. That's something that William Binney will forever have my respect for, because it took a lot of guts to do what he did. And so many people don't even know his name, and I think that needs to change. You'll get his whole talk, 212-209-2950, pledge for the Hope Archive premiums. Let's take a listen to William Binney from 2012 in New York City. Certainly was in the NSA buildings that we saw just a moment ago. After 9/11, he noticed a change in what the NSA was doing. He saw that the technology was being used against Americans in our own country, and that was too much for him to deal with. And he became, instead of an NSA analyst, he became an NSA whistleblower. And I think there's nothing more courageous than standing up to such a powerful entity and letting the rest of us know what's really going on. And with that, it's my honor to introduce as our keynote this Friday, William Binney.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the coordinators of HOPE for inviting me here to give me the opportunity to express my story. Some of it was hard to believe. I'm sure you'll find some of it difficult to believe. I find some of it difficult myself to even believe that actually things like this happened and our government did these kinds of things. But what I'd like to do is go through my entire background with NSA and how I handled the events in 9/11 after that and all the things that happened with the Department of Justice and us after that. Plus, then I'd like to go into some of the technology that is involved in large database analysis with you, and then give you my impression of what the White House's new initiative on big data analysis is really all about, even though they can't say it correctly. This is really what they're asking, and I'll try to define that for you, and hopefully that'll give you some idea. It'll certainly give you a better idea, I believe, how these events occurring and how dangerous metadata is to monitoring the entire population. As I've said before in different forums, the KGB, the Stasi, and the Gestapo could never have dreamt of having anything as great or as comprehensive as this capacity to monitor the population. Their primary focus, they tried to get information about their population so they could control it, and that's fundamentally what dictatorships and totalitarian systems do around the world. And that, unfortunately, is the way our government is going. And so I'll try to define what that's all about, the technology behind that, and what they're asking now and in the future. And they're spending hundreds of millions to do that a year here. Well, here's how this solution worked. You know, it was actually penciled out. It wasn't done in the computer. You know, the point is that miracles don't happen in the computer. They happen in your mind, and you relate them on paper. And you could see them on paper, and then you build the programs to manage them. Computers can do a certain amount, but fundamentally the trick is to get your mind wrapped around the problem to where you can understand it, to the point where you can see into it and begin to break it apart and solve it. So at any rate, 9/11 happened, and so I started thinking, maybe I should reconsider retiring, because I always wanted to do something positive, like stop the bad guys, even though there was all this corruption around me, you know. It must have been right after, a few days, no more than a week after 9/11, that they had decided to begin actively spying on everyone in this country. And they were doing it by taking billing data from telecoms. But what I didn't know at the time was in February of 2001, they had already started requesting that data from different telecoms. This is when the CEO of Quest refused them, and he went into court and testified to that, and that he was approached by some three-star general out of NSA to provide customer data. But that was in February of 2001. Well, the point was that we had put our system together all from end to end and had it functioning in November of 2000. So this is 3 months after that, which meant that they wanted that back part of our program to run all the spying. All right, so that's exactly what they did. So then they started taking the telecom data, and it expanded after that. So, I mean, the one I knew was AT&T, and that one provided 320 million records every day. That was just phone calls. And then when they got the taps in, like the ones in San Francisco, they started the Naris devices to take the data off the internet. So what I did after that was, I was naive enough to think that the government would really, if people in certain positions of the government knew this was going on, that they would take some action to correct it, or at least bring it back into some constitutional form of, or some process that was constitutionally acceptable. You know, so I went to the House. Senate, the House Intelligence Committee, the HPSI, and the staff member that I personally knew there, and she then went to Porter Goss, who was the chairman of that committee, and also Nancy Pelosi, who was the deputy, or the minority rep. They were all briefed into the program at the time, by the way, and all the other programs that were going on, including all these CIA programs. Porter Goss referred her to General Hayden out at NSA. Well, I mean, you know, it's going back to the origin of this program. So, and he went out there, and of course she talked to him, and he said, of course, we don't have to worry about that now. It's all been approved by the White House, and it's legal. So spying on everybody then was legal internally. It was all written up in memos by you and I guess others. Held in. In fact, I know the NSA lawyer went down to Addington's office in Cheney's, who was right outside of Cheney's office. Addington was his legal rep there, and he asked for the memos that said that the spying was legal, so he'd have a written record documentation, so that his ass wasn't on the line, you know. And he never got it, of course. Because if he got anything like that, and I don't think anything like that was written, because that would be direct evidence for impeachment. So, but they didn't do that, so. And they didn't get the records, so they kept going, and that program was reauthorized every 45 days by the, what I call the Yes Committee, which was Hayden and Tenet and the DOJ. So, shortly after that, I mean, I went from there. I wasn't alone in this, by the way. There were four others out of NSA and one staff from the HPSI, one member of the staff. We were all trying to work internally in the government over these years, trying to get them to come around to being constitutionally acceptable and take it into the courts and have the courts oversight of it too. So we naively kept thinking that that could happen. And it never did. In fact, even now they're trying to keep all these issues out of the court. That's why I signed the affidavit for EFF to to help testify. I wanted to testify in court about all this stuff. Because, in my mind, these people are still hiding behind this, quote, national security curtain. And all I want to do is move that aside and say, see, don't pay attention to that man behind the curtain, because he's affecting you. He's affecting every one of us. I mean, in my mind, we're going down this slippery slope towards totalitarianism. And that's why I told Jim Bamford that I thought we were about that far from a totalitarian state. At least everything's set to make that, turn that key and have that happen.
And we've been listening to William Binney from Hope Number 9 giving the keynote address. Just part of our special keynote package that we've been offering tonight on Off the Hook. William Binney, ex-NSA. What a talk that was. You guys remember this?
It was a heck of a talk to listen to.
Yeah, really. It was inspirational and made you angry at the same time. Bernie, I know you were there for that as well.
I was, and I have to say that was some of the most terrifying and scary talk I have ever heard in my life, not just at a Hope conference. It frightened the hell out of me that our government, it shouldn't be surprising to any of us what he was saying, but to hear someone who was there that actively tried to get our government to follow the Constitution, and the part we didn't hear was he was arrested by gunpoint in his shower in his own home. And basically charged with espionage for trying to they wanted to lock him up for the rest of his life for talking about this stuff. There's a backstory, Emmanuel. I think you've probably heard this too, that Laura Poitras, who was at that talk at Hope, filmed Binney and used some of the footage from this talk you just heard in her op doc produced along with the New York Times back in 2012. And the word is that Edward Snowden saw that documentary while he was working for an NSA contractor. And I think he's actually spoken or at least touched on this. And this is the talk that inspired Edward Snowden to realize that going through official channels to report illegality by our own government on a massive scale even was not the way to go. Because the government will just arrest you at gunpoint, lock you up for the rest of your life, or try to. And that's why Edward Snowden decided to leave the country and go public from a safe place. Had he done what William Binney did, is try to work within the system, we wouldn't be hearing much from Edward Snowden right now.
Interesting. Well, so you're saying that what Binney was saying was a direct inspiration to Snowden.
I have heard this from more than one source that that op doc that Edward Snowden saw called The Program, produced by with the New York Times and Laura Poitras, excerpts of this Hope talk were in that documentary. I've seen the documentary. You can just search online for The Program and Laura Poitras, P-O-I-T-R-A-S. You'll see part of this Hope Talk in that documentary. And Edward Snowden is reported to have seen that and been inspired to realize that going through official channels to report gross illegality and unconstitutionality by our own government was futile. And I think we all know that had Edward Snowden tried to go through official channels like Bill Bennywood did, we would not have learned huge amounts of information we'd learned from his leaks. This information never would have gotten out. The huge troves of information we've learned from Edward Snowden would have never reached public ears and eyes had Edward Snowden gone through official channels at NSA. So that's why he did what he did. But this talk we've just heard is a key part of the puzzle of how all this stuff works. And I encourage, if you want a real scare, you know, I've seen scary movies before. If you watch this DVD, you will be frightened to death. I think it's really scary. 212-209-2950, you'll get this talk. You'll get like a dozen more, either on a DVD set or on a flash drive, $50 and $75 respectively. And you'll be supporting a radio station that makes this available to the public. There aren't any other radio stations that are going to air this material. So please support this station and what we're trying to do here by calling 212-209-2950 and ask, what is it exactly, the name of the premiums we need to ask for?
Okay, well, we have a couple of updates, so we feel we need to give people here, because I know a number of people have been calling in trying to pledge for these things. It's really frustrating when the government tries to prevent you from getting word out. It's exceptionally frustrating when incompetence prevents you from actually doing it when you've surpassed that particular challenge. We have had the premiums registered here at the station, but they were hidden, and nobody could pledge for them for the past hour and 20 minutes. And since we're kind of isolated here in a radio station with no phones, we had no way of knowing what was going on until we did a little bit of investigation ourselves while we're doing the show. So we're sorry about that. Not our fault. We had the things registered, but somehow they were registered wrong. And if you were calling in and trying to pledge for these things, you were probably told that you couldn't do it. And I'm sorry about that. They are now visible. If you search for Hope at givetowbai.org, go to the third page, you'll see them at the bottom there. And if you call 212-209-2950, and please, I hope all the people who have been calling for the last 80 minutes call back, 212-209-2950. The people there now will know what you're talking about, because whoever hid the premiums has now unhidden them.
And I'd like to give a special shout out and thanks to the multiple listeners who emailed us and tweeted at us about this problem.
Sometimes this place, just, you know, it's I can't use the words I want to use. But, yeah, I hope our listeners are still with us, and we'll call in droves now to make up for all the time that this mistake has cost us. And I hope you've enjoyed what we've played so far, because it's pretty inspiring stuff. And I know a lot of people want this package. 212-209-2950. I fear the pledge people will be overwhelmed by all the calls that come in, hopefully.
Good. Yeah. I think that's the way to go. And if you go to givetowbai.org and search for Hope Archives, they'll be at least on the first page of results. And if you call 212-209-2950 and say, I would like the Hope Archive DVD collection or the Hope Archive thumb drive, they will be able to find it too.
And
so
those of you
exciting in
charge of things here, when you see that we raised a big fat goose egg for the first hour of the show, hopefully that won't be something that is judged on us, and we wind up at 4 o'clock in the morning in a graveyard shift because we don't have any listeners. We have plenty of people out there that support us and want this package and have been trying to get it for a while now. 212-209-2950. We apologize to our listeners for this oversight, whatever caused it.
And for those of you listening to us in the mysterious future because you were unable to listen live and you checked out the podcast or the archive copy, this for as long as these last, they will still be listed on the site and you should be able to get them. Give2wbai.org or call 212-209-2950.
Limited quantities available, but if you call or visit the website, and you should do it now before they run out, but if you still see them there or they can still find them, they're still available.
Yeah, well, they're all there now because none of them have been touched. So,
Well, right, if you're listening live, then you definitely don't have this problem.
Again, 212-209-2950, you'll get all the DVDs for $50. You'll get a big fat thumb drive for $75, all the keynote addresses for all the Hope conferences.
So even though it's not our fault, I think as an apology to our listeners for this trouble, if you pledge for the thumb drive, we will throw in a few extra talks.
Well, we're going to do that anyway.
Well,
but yeah, okay. Now we're doing it because of that. That's what we'll say. That's how.
I'm trying to be nice to the people.
Well,
our most supportive listeners.
We already said we were throwing in extra ones, though.
Oh, I was out of the room when we said
all
that.
All right, but we'll make it up somehow. We'll try. We'll work extra hard.
Yeah, like we'll have another Hope conference this next summer.
All right, I guess we'll do that then.
Yeah.
212-209-2950. The problem is we're so cut off here. We can't see calls coming in anymore. We can't talk to our listeners on the phone. And things like this happen. And thanks to the listeners who were... how did we hear from them if we don't have
a couple
any...
of people emailed us. Someone I know direct messaged me on Twitter about it.
You shouldn't be checking your phone during the show. We've discussed this. And,
fortunately,
well, you're assuming I checked it on my phone.
We have a remote producer reading the emails who notified us.
All right. That's the kind of thing that can happen with live radio. You won't hear this on NPR. That's for damn sure. 212-209-2950.
There's something else we haven't mentioned. If by any chance these premiums are not of particular interest to you, there are other things you can do to support the station. There are other premiums you can get if you go online to give to WBAI.org. There's a link called Favorite Show eDonation. You can donate to your favorite show, and WBAI has some special things for you apart from the premiums we offer. But just mention that you're donating in the name of Off the Hook, because that's our favorite show. We hope it's one of yours. Also, if you don't want to donate $50, you can donate lesser amounts, and we will still appreciate it. A lot of people donating a little bit is just as good as one person donating a huge pile. And so you can be of help. You can still become part of what happens at the station. You can get a BAI membership. You can become a BAI buddy and have regular donations automatically billed to you subscription style, and take a hands-off approach to how you support us, but you will still be supporting us. 212-209-2950 or give to WBAI.org.
On the other hand, if you are able to contribute more, you know, maybe your company just got bought out by Google and you have $1,000 sitting around to send to us, we would love that too.
Yeah, isn't the end of the fiscal year approaching?
I don't know what
that
means.
Yeah, I think that happens in September or something. I don't know. I don't understand it either. 212-209-2950. Help us keep going here at WBAI on Off the Hook. Hey, I'd like to go to another excerpt just so I can maybe stick my head out the window and scream a little bit. This is from the year 2002. That was the year we had Aaron Magruder show up. And again, people were asking, this was after we had Jell-O, the previous conference, people were asking, what does he have to do with the hacker community? I'll tell you what Aaron Magruder had to do with the hacker community. He was the guy that actually got the whole DECSS controversy right in Boondocks. He portrayed it in every single newspaper in the country, which carried Boondocks, a large number did. And
print newspaper. This was back when print newspapers were a thing.
Well, yeah, they still are somewhere. But the point is, he was able to do what the people writing news stories were unable to do, and that's get the story right. And I believe we described that as a really good hack back then, and it's something that we appreciate to this day. So here's a little bit of an excerpt from Aaron's talk back in 2002. Again, that phone number, 212-209-2950. $50 gets you the entire collection of all of our Hope keynotes, plus a few other talks. $75 gets you all of that in thumb drive form. So it's either DVD or thumb drives. 212-209-2950.
I mean, what's scary to me is we at this point are at a loss for what to do. We don't know what to do about our politicians. You know, we don't know what to do about foreign policy. First of all, there's a few things that you should think about. One, I mean, I remember after September 11th, all these people were like, let's go get them. Let's go fight them. Let's go do this. Let's go do that. Oh, yeah, like it's up to you. Shut up. All these people in coffee shops. I hate that. I hate people talking about foreign policy in coffee. You know what? Why? You have no say? Shut up. First of all, you don't know anything. That's what Americans, I just wish, see, I'm the guy to say, you know what, I don't know anything. I'm standing in front of a room of people, you all know a lot more than I do about a lot of stuff that's actually practical, has practical uses in the world. God bless you for it. Me, I know nothing. But at least I admit to that. I tell jokes. I have a halfway clever sense of humor if you catch me on the right day. That's it. And you know what? Most Americans are just like me. They don't know anything. So shut up. You are an idiot who has been raised by advertising since you were 2.5 years old. You don't know anything. Americans, they watch like the O'Reilly Factor and feel educated. And talk about things as though they knew. Like, you know what the problem is with Cuba? No, and you don't either. Because you've never been there and neither have I. Cuba could be like Nirvana for all I know. You don't know about Cuba. You don't know about Iraq. You know, like. So that really angers me. Yeah, I was having a discussion about September 11th. And I can't believe we need to go kill them. Why? They took out our buildings. Ours? I didn't own any of those buildings. Well, they killed a bunch of our people. Well, you know, we killed 500,000 Iraqis. No, we didn't. Yes, we did. How many people you think died over there while we was dropping all them bombs day in and day out? Not as many as we got killed. Yeah, that doesn't count even like the million or so that died after because of the sanctions and all that. You know, it's Americans. Look, the world is ignorant. Look, you know, people in oppressed dictatorships, communist countries, whatever. You know what? They don't know what's going on in the world because their media is controlled. And you know what? Neither do we. Our media is controlled. But you know what? If you go to Iraq and ask somebody, and I haven't done it, but I figure, if you go to Iraq and ask somebody and say, what's going on in the world? They probably say, I don't know. Saddam doesn't let us watch anything. But the difference over here, we think we know. We have the illusion of wisdom. We swear we know about what's going on in the world, and we don't. So, just like we swear we live in a democratic society, so we say these things to each other like, yeah, we need to go over there and do that. I'm going to write my congressman. Nobody cares. You have no say. You're not important. Who'd you vote for? Gore. No, I mean, no. Hey, nothing. That's the thing. But if you voted for Gore, you know what? You should just leave. Like, at least I voted for Nader. He didn't have a chance.
And that was Aaron Magruder speaking at our 2002 conference, H2K2, giving the keynote address, one of many talks that you will get for a pledge to 212-209-2950. You'll get all the keynotes for a pledge of $50. You'll on DVD format, you'll get all of them on a flash drive for $75, 212-209-2950. That was quite a talk. It was controversial, to say the least. It angered some people. Including some other speakers as well. But that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of giving talks and having a free exchange of ideas. It makes you think, because even if you disagree with some of the things that Aaron was saying, he got to a point where, yeah, you know what? What he's saying rings true, particularly us believing we know things, and we really don't know things. We really aren't experts on the rest of the world, and we're told a lot of things. The media spoon-feeds us garbage. The government controls the media. We're starting to wake up to that a lot more. Back then, it was a little bit more difficult to get that out, but it was a real honor to have him at our conference giving this talk, controversial as it was. In fact, we embraced the controversy. Again, just one of many talks that we are offering here tonight.
So look, if you pledge $50 for the Hope Archives DVD collection, pledge $75 for the Hope Archives thumb drive, 212-209-2950, you're going to get this in the mail, you're going to get these videos, and you're going to watch them, right? And there's going to be someone on that who says something you disagree with.
Yes.
Probably every single keynote will say at least one thing you disagree with.
They better.
But you're going to get perspectives from some of the smartest people in the world on these crucial issues, and you would be a fool to not at least consider their viewpoints. And you can do that if you pledge and you receive these premiums. You'll get them all in one package, all in one place. You can watch them. You can just binge watch them, stay up all night. Probably, you know, you'll need a lot of caffeine or something to watch them all at once. Or you can watch one a week for, you know, half a year. You got lots of options. 212-209-2950.
Well, we're not saying you're a fool if you don't get the package. I think we're saying you're a fool if you just dismiss different viewpoints out of hand, or label an entire community of people or an entire conference or anybody just based on one perspective that's presented.
Exactly. You know, I'm sure there are things that I will strongly disagree with that are on this set, but there are also things that I strongly agree with. There are things that I'm, you know, on the fence about, but each one of those things, whether I agreed with it or not, was something interesting. It was something that made me think. It was something that got a discussion going. And that's something that I love about Hope. It's something that I love about this station, because I listen to WBAI a lot. I'll turn it on sometimes, and there will be something that that I don't agree with at all. But it will still be something that makes me think. It will still be something that I appreciate has a chance to have this forum to do their thing on the air, because that wouldn't happen at other stations. 212-209-2950 or give to WBAI.org to help this keep happening.
And some of these are a little ahead of their time. I mean, it would have been hard, I think, to hear what Benny was saying. It was hard. I remember it. And relate it, not having the hindsight, the perspective that you have now, years and years later. I remember at the time it was surreal. It was like these huge, massive numbers.
Yes.
In terms of data sizes, amounts of files.
It was unbelievable.
It was really, but there and where he was coming from was not, you know, there was not some massive media institution behind him. This was an individual who had worked in the industry at a time when whistleblowing itself was under a lot of scrutiny. We were basically on a bit of a high, I think, as a country coming off the elections. But in fact, what was occurring with drones and with surveillance and whistleblowing, it was just emerging then. And so a lot of this would have been a little bit odd coming down the path, but now, I mean, looking back, it was so dead on, and I would say the same thing with some of the critiques Jello and like Aaron have had of media, and yeah. Some of that stuff we're still looking at now.
It's hard to actually listen to these talks and say, oh, that's obviously from that period of time, because you're talking about Benny, who gave a talk in 2012, and we just heard Aaron Magruder giving a talk in 2002, 10 years earlier, and they're both keyed in to the hypocrisies and the injustices that are happening around us, things that affect us very significantly, and things that the mass media was completely ignoring or just totally missing. And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty, because that clued in attitude exists in all the conferences that we've had, exists with all of our keynote speakers. Brock Meeks was our keynote speaker for Beyond Hope in 1997, the only conference that did not take place at the Hotel Pennsylvania. He was working with MSNBC then, and he's gone on to do all kinds of incredible things since. But he also gave a great talk. Just so many amazing pieces that you'll get as part of this package when you call 212-209-2950. And Rob, you pointed this out to me during the break. Aaron Magruder's Wikipedia page.
Ah, yes. If you look Aaron Magruder up on Wikipedia, as of this broadcast, the photo of him used there is a photo I took of him at Hope in 2002, which is kind of happy in one way, but in another way, come on, Wikimedians, it's been 13 years. You
Wait,
can find a better picture
you
of him.
Took this picture.
I did.
And it's been up since whenever his page came up.
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow. I saw that he was at the Hope Conference in 2002. That's his picture, but I didn't know you took the picture. That's really kind of weird. But yeah, and Aaron has continued to do all kinds of amazing things post Boondocks. Black Jesus, incredible program that
awesome
he's involved
show.
In, and hope to see many, many more creative things from him and from all of our speakers at the various conferences, not just the keynotes. We have Average of about 150 speakers per conference, and some of them are really amazing people.
And with Aaron in particular, he was talking a bit about, at the time, he was just doing Boondocks as a comic strip, and it had something of a cult following, but he talked about how he wanted to build it up into a TV thing, and of course, years later, it became a TV thing and was very successful. So successful, in fact, that Network took it away from him and tried to do it without him. It didn't work as well, but...
No.
But,
talking about the animated Boondocks.
Yes, the animated Boondocks. Yeah. But yeah, he's gone and been so many good places and done really interesting work since then, and it's great to see him back then still as interesting. Still doing neat things and still coming at it from a direction that's very much of a hacker perspective.
And what I find really amazing too is people like this, people that we respect so much, whether it's Edward Snowden or William Binney, Aaron Magruder, Jello Biafra, or Steve Wozniak, etc., etc. They are all amazed by our community. They are impressed and blown away by what hackers are doing. And to me, there's no better honor than that, to be able to see that kind of appreciation coming from people that you really hold in high regard. We are going to run out of time if we're not careful, so I want to make sure we have enough time to play this last excerpt, and that's from our most recent conference in 2014, HopeX, the 10th Hope Conference. You don't have to look too far to know who we had as our keynote speaker then. Actually, we had a couple of people for our keynote speaker. They gave kind of a combined talk, a conversation, we basically made history. I don't know how we're going to top it. But Daniel Ellsberg and Edward Snowden gave a joint talk, a conversation, as we've been saying, last July. A year ago, July. And this was shortly after Edward Snowden came upon the scene, and just the most recent chapter in Incredible Talks. You can get all these talks. You can get all the keynotes plus a few others in DVD format by calling 212-209-2950 and asking for the DVD set for $50 or the flash drive set for $75. 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org and look it up. Type HOPE into the search bar there, and I think it comes up on the third page. Or maybe it'll show up easier goes by.
If you type HOPE archives, then it will be on
comes
the,
right up.
The page.
All right. Yeah. Let's go back and listen to something from July of 2014. Again, 212-209-2950.
Hardly anybody was willing to extrapolate and say, well, Ellsberg has shown that four previous presidents lied in the same way, escalated in the same way, made the same kind of secret threats, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson. But it ended with those. It ended before Nixon. So I thought maybe they'll figure out that maybe the current president is doing the same. No, it took documents, and I didn't have that. So for years, I've been saying to people, it's got to be with documents, even though that increases their risk. Well, people know that, basically, but they weren't willing to take the risk, I'm sorry to say, and couldn't do it anonymously. So then Manning came out with his millions, hundreds of thousands, actually, of cables, and then you with documents. And it's like Mordecai Vanunu in Israel with photographs that Israel had a nuclear program and even an H-bomb that they weren't willing to admit. And it took those documents, which took the risk. So what I was saying is, I saw right away, without having met you, without having met Manning, that this is someone who I identify with. And at the same time, new heroes. You said, what was my feeling when I heard Snowden's name? I said, well, I have a new hero now. And so, thank you.
Thank you. If I could actually follow up on that, I think there's a really important point there that hasn't been real well addressed in the media. And that was, you said you acted, you know, not to reveal a specific illegality, but to end a war, to basically correct failures of policies that were costing lives, that were costing us the future of our country at a critical moment, where things could be changed, where we could step back sort of from the brink and enjoy a better society. And I think people need to remember that these stories that are being published by journalists, the journalists are working together with their editors, with their institutions, to really analyze whether these things are in the public interest, whether they will benefit us as a society to know, and not publish things that are just, gossip or they don't have a significant justification for going to the public domain. Since these stories were revealed, we not only learned sort of the new truth of our world about the fact that all of our communications are being intercepted, collected, analyzed, and stored automatically. And that means that all of our ideas, all of our thoughts, all of our expressions, all of our associations, who we talk to, who we meet, who we love, who we hate, all of these things are now subordinated to the officials, to the policies of a few guys behind closed doors. And we don't know, we can't hold them to account. They don't answer to us. They don't even answer to the full body of Congress. There are only 8 members in Congress. They're called the Gang of 8, who get fully briefed on these intelligence programs. And interestingly, the intelligence community, the intelligence committees that are supposed to oversee these programs, these guys who have access to classified information, they receive more money from actually all of them. Every single member of this committee receives money from the top 20 intelligence companies in the United States. And they also receive more money from these companies than any other members in Congress. In fact, a single one of these congressmen, his name is Dutch Ruppersberger, received over $350,000 from these companies alone. That's not all of his donations. That's just from these top 20 companies. So when we think about the revelations, when we think about the fact that we've learned what's going on, when we have an ability to bait it, when we have the ability to correct this overreach, when we have the ability to protest unconstitutional activities that never should have begun, but we also have a broader civic understanding of how our government works. We see that the most senior officials in government have been lying under oath. They've been making false statements to Congress, for example, James Clapper. But not just Congress. It's not just the lies we know of. There are other ones that didn't get as much attention. For example, the Department of Justice, the Solicitor General of the United States, he lied to the Supreme Court twice in writing, and it was in the New York Times. But, you know, this didn't become the front page news that, you know, persists and we respond to. But it was a direct revelation that came out on the newspaper on June 7th, was when we found out that people had been surveilled. To dial back, because it gets technical in terms of surveillance authorities, what happened is the government was using warrantless surveillance to collect evidence to justify warrant applications for warranted surveillance. That's a violation of both the Fourth and the Fifth Amendment for people who are keeping score. And what's interesting is they didn't report this to the courts and they didn't report this to defendants. But then they later told the Supreme Court that they were. And it turned out that was untrue. If we don't know these kind of things, we don't know our government. We have to be able to know not just what governments do, but how they act in order to decide how closely we need to scrutinize their behaviors. And if we didn't have whistleblowers like you, like Tom Drake, and like everybody else who's come forward at tremendous risks, we would have a less open, less free, and less accountable society. And because of that, I think it's worth taking risks to do this. And it's not just what's illegal. You know, the scandal is what is legal. The scandal is what's happening every day, the unconstitutional activities that are still occurring right now. The fact that we look at, for example, one of the things that's been talked about a lot is how to fix this. The fact that the least controversial program in terms of do we end it, does this do nothing, is Section 215. And Section 215 of the Patriot Act basically says that, hey, we can collect the call records, metadata records from everybody in the country, regardless of whether they are suspected of any crime, any wrongdoing. And we have to ask, you know, what does that do? Why are they doing this? What is the value? Because if you encrypt communications, right, they don't get anything out of that. This is just the signaling records. This is like what a private eye collects. Who you meet, who you talk to, when it happened, where it was at. Not the exact content of what was said during these calls. So encryption protects the content, but we forget about associations. And that's what this is about. These programs like Section 215, mass surveillance in general, is not about surveilling you. It's not about surveilling me. It's about surveilling us. collectively. It's about watching the company that you keep for everybody in the country and on a global scale. This is basically a big data program which provides the raw data that can then be analyzed, it can be filtered, it can be subjected to rules, for example, like we've seen on SkidScore, that says everything you do is being analyzed, it's being weighted, it's being measured, and that's without regard to whether or not you've done anything wrong. So when people say, you know, why does this matter? Well, why do I care? You know, why should I get up off the couch? It's because, again, when we think about this in terms of the Fourth and Fifth Amendment, you know, it's an unreasonable seizure because there's nothing to justify doing it. It happens in advance of any criminal suspicion. Or the due process violations under the Fifth Amendment, where the government is basically saying, we're going to use warrantless surveillance to collect evidence to then secretly use to get a warrant application. Or the First Amendment violations of our freedom to associate, right? Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of the press, freedom of speech, or our right to associate, to enjoy the company of whoever we want. If you let go of your rights for a moment, you've lost them for a lifetime. And that's why this matters, is because it happened and we didn't know about it. We weren't told about it. In the post-September 11th period, we had programs set up like StellarWind. They collected all of our internet metadata, all of our calling metadata, and it was creating a massive, deep, robust data set that allows us to look at connections and actually programmatically analyze the connections of everybody at every place all the time. And I think that's not what this country is about. I think that's a fundamentally un-American thing. And I think we the people, you in this room right now, have both the means and the capability to help build a better future by encoding our rights into the programs and protocols upon which we rely every day. And that's what a lot of my future work is going to be involved in, and I hope that you will join me in the Freedom of the Press and every other organization in making that a reality.
Yeah. So I should mention both Dan Ellsberg and now Ed Snowden are on Freedom of the Press Foundation's board of directors, and we really want to make it our goal to help journalists and sources and everyone connect in a way that can be protected from the government's eyes when and essentially protect our right to privacy and freedom of speech. And so I think that brings me to my next question for Ed, and this comes from one of the Ask Snowden questions on Twitter, is what specifically can designers and developers and others working in technology start to do to make things better? And are there specific examples out there that you would like to see people follow?
So when I talk about this, it's always difficult because it's entirely dependent on the threat model of the individual who's operating. Gam-Gam in the home has a different set of priorities than somebody who's working to report on the malfeasance of a deeply irresponsible government in an authoritarian regime. And so generally when I talk about this, I say encryption. I say encryption, 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 because it's an important first step that denies the government access to anything more typically than suspicion, which is drawn from association. But when we talk about how we fix this stuff for the future, we've got to realize that association is often the problem. It doesn't end at encryption. It starts at encryption. Because if you don't think about the links, sort of the signals that are happening, when I email you, and the government can't read the content of the communication, but they go, you know, why is an employee of the government who was at work on Thursday at the Central Intelligence Agency or the National Security Agency or the FBI, who works on programs which would be deeply embarrassing to the government, why are they contacting someone at the Freedom of the Press Foundation or the Washington Post or the New York Times? And so we get tools like SecureDrop, which are good because they allow us to use mixed routing networks like Tor to sort of obfuscate our direct network path. But we've got to think about the fact that today if people are connecting through a phone, that's not super helpful because the phone, for example, sees that you're connecting to a good example of this, really a bad example in terms of OPSEC, is this recent American spy who was discovered in Germany. He was apparently allegedly in the newspapers, spying for the United States against Germany. He then, I guess, wasn't satisfied with what was going on. So he said, hey, I'm going to shop myself to what I think are the Russians, because he got an email. He was using Gmail, by the way. Great, great OPSEC there. And he got an email that purported to be the Russian embassy. And they said, hey, you want to sell some documents? He said, oh, yeah, sure, sure. And he sent them three classified documents. Now, this is an email. I don't know whether it's encrypted or non-encrypted. That hasn't really been covered in detail. But the key is the adversary that was on the distant end of the communication, in this case, German counterintelligence for his model, although he's actually allegedly a spy. He's not interested in public interest. He's interested in money. Is the fact that when he did this, he was the only one who had access to these documents who was out of the office at the time. He took the day off to send this email. So again, you know, we're not talking about the most sophisticated guy in the world, but this is the kind of thing you have to worry about in terms of how do governments discover their adversaries. And the same techniques they use to discover spies, they use to discover journalists. You know, the Risen case and the Rosen case, both of these are journalists in the United States where, for example, the government was trying to get James Risen, New York Times reporter, to reveal his source, or they were subpoenaing an AP reporter, I believe, all of the phones in their office to say who from the government called the Associated Press. These are associational records. They didn't get the content of the calls, but they were trying to figure out what was going on. When we think about how we fix these programmatically, when we think about these in terms of protocols, we need to have protocols that are resistant to traffic analysis. They need to be padded, basically, even if there's some level of performance penalty. So you can't look at differences in, for example, Skype conversations and tell which phoneme or word was spoken based on packet size, the signaling speed, so on and so forth. You also need to use some sort of mixed routing, some sort of shared infrastructure that divorces the individual connection from the individual origination point. And that's still a hard problem. We haven't solved that in sort of a performance respecting manner. Tor does a really good job, but Tor is also TCP only. It doesn't handle UDP and a lot of other things like that. But this is something that's better to really get down and have everybody get in together. Sort of red team. Somebody pitches an idea, and the other people in the community, whether that's Twitter, whether that's a mailing list, they tear it down. It's the peer review model. That's how we do these things and we fix it. We need people to attack these systems. We need people to work as adversaries to try to find holes so we can fix them. And there's also the user experience issue. For example, GPG is robust and pretty reliable encryption. Unfortunately, it's damn near unusable. I mean, it's fine if you're comfortable with the command line. It's fine if you're good with key management. But again, gam at the home is never going to be able to do that sort of thing. We need encryption, mixed routing. We need non-attributable communications or unattributable internet access, UIA, for example, that's available to people. It's easy, that's transparent, and that's reliable. That we can use not just here in the United States but around the world, because, again, this is a global problem. The National Security Agency, the FBI, these guys led the way because we've got the biggest budgets and we're the most aggressive when it comes to that kind of thing. But we're only the first. We're not the last. This is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And we have to, you know, the grad students of the world have to be thinking about what they can do to fix this. They need to think in adversarial terms. They need to think about, how are the worst people on earth going to try to subvert and break your system to not just damage individuals, but to damage governments, to shield themselves from oversight and accountability? And what can you do? What do you know? What can you think up to help shield us from that? And the techniques are only limited by our imagination.
Okay. I hope people are taking notes here or in the darkness or texting the suggestion. He's giving you your marching orders. Okay.
They know this stuff.
All right, that was an excerpt from Edward Snowden at HopeX. a year ago, July, giving the keynote address. Wow, what a talk that was. What an event that was. And I could just listen to that forever. And I wish we could play the whole thing here. But, you know, you can get the whole thing along with every other keynote address that we have had at every HOPE conference since 1994 and a bunch of other talks as well by calling 212-209-2950 and pledging either $50 for the DVD set or $75 for the flash drive. And again, we were having trouble before with the premiums, but they are all in stock now. Please give us a call in the last couple of minutes of this extended program. We are not going to be on next week. We'll be on in 2 weeks. And we'd like to see a last-minute burst. 212-209-2950.
We want to give a special thanks to the people who did call back after the problem was fixed and pledge, and we have a few of those, and some people who probably just tried for the first time after later in the show. But there's still a few minutes left. 212-209-2950. You pledge for the HOPE Archives DVD collection. That's $50. The HOPE Archives thumb drive, which is $75 and includes all the DVDs plus some extra special talks. And really, there's nothing like this collection of material anywhere. To have it all in one place, there will be stuff you learn from this. There will be stuff you hate, but I think it'll be worth it.
All right, we are out of time. I want to thank everybody who called in and thank those of you who have your finger on push buttons or dials or whatever and are calling 212-209-2950 to keep Off the Hook on the air here on WBAI New York. It's 9 o'clock. Something else will be coming up right after this. And you can write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Good night.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant. And speaking of options, that's what we have today. Every week I present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, I give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Today, we have an extended fundraiser. This is not an extended show. This is a one-hour show. I have had a fundraiser up to now. I've had a premium. It's actually spectacular. What I have added premium, and that is a vision improvement kit, a kit created by a doctor banker who worked years studying the eyes, studying vision, and she put together a chart with a method of improving eyesight. How many of us, myself included, wear glasses? And how many of us really don't need to? That is a very important question. You know, when we look at children, there was a study out of the University School of Medicine, Vanderbilt University. It said that when children go to an optometrist for an eye exam, they're prescribed glasses 35% of the time. If they go to a general ophthalmologist, they're prescribed glasses 12% of the time. If they go to a pediatric ophthalmologist, they're prescribed glasses only 2% of the time. So what is this telling us? This study clearly shows the importance of choosing the right professional eye doctor to examine your eyes and your children's eyes. What happens is that once you are prescribed eyeglasses at any age, a weakening of your eyesight advances and progresses. We talk about people come in and you make a prescription, our doctors make a prescription of this medicine, and the prognosis is the patient will take medicine forever. But with eyeglasses, once you start eyeglasses, not only do you use them forever, your glasses progressively need to get stronger and stronger to be able to maintain adequate and functional vision. What is happening is that the eyes then become accustomed to seeing through the glasses, and that becomes their range of vision, and they weaken from that point. So their ability to focus is reducing and reducing and reducing with the use of glasses or eye crutches. Now, there have been methods of working with the eye that have had some very powerful testimonials on vision improvement. So here today with us, I have invited a guest. His name is John Monroe. He worked for over 20 years working with the Dr. Banker method of improving vision. So what we some descriptions on vision, but all direct statements on vision improvement that he has seen within his years of practice. To get this started, I want to begin by saying that it's the Dr. Banker Vision Self-Help Improvement Kit. We've gotten a special on this here for WBAI, specifically for WBAI. The premium is $100. First of all, I want to say BAI is our station. It's your station. I think it's my station, and we're both right. It's here giving you options on many levels. We discuss options on cancer. We discuss options on hormones. We discuss options on thyroid. We discuss options when people's energy crashes. This show, this radio station, is about options. They're being given to you by the information that we share with you. Your ability to function in the world depends on your ability to make choices. WBAI is here to support you with knowledge. We don't have sound bites. We have total monographs of information that explain to you what you need to know or what you need to know to begin the research so you can make these choices yourself. Support WBAI. Think about it for 1 second. What would it be like to be without WBAI? Pretty sad thought, isn't it? Well, today you have a chance to support BAI. And you have a chance to support Take Charge of Your Health. And you're also going to listen to a dynamic radio.
Yes, I'm right here.
Oh, welcome. I'm so glad that you information with us.
That's no problem.
How should we begin?
Well, basically, I can let people know that my title is a natural vision improvement educator. And I worked with Dr. Deborah Banker, an ophthalmologist, who did a lot of different things. I worked with her in her clinic for 15 years, and I've been doing this also now for 6 years on my own with my partner, Jeannie Mainzer. Dr. Banker passed away in 2007, and I had to take over the business for her and her son. You know, they wanted me to continue working with this. So problems, and people with glasses, and contact lenses, reading glasses, eye diseases, other diseases of the body. And I just have a lot of experience with this. I've been doing this every day now for over 20 years. And we've helped a lot of people that, you know, if people want to help themselves and get into this and want to do it, they can improve their eyesight and eye problems. It all kind of bases on how high your prescription is on your glasses, you know, how long it'll take to improve your sight and eliminate the glasses. And it also depends with eye diseases and diseases of the body, you know, how developed they are, how long you've had the problem, how much it's spread, you know, what stage is the disease at. But usually if we catch things early enough, we can help reverse these. But the big thing we do is teach people how to prevent getting eye problems, you know, getting eye diseases, what's causing people to get cancer and diabetes, you know. A lot of the problems people have, over 50% of them could be prevented. You know,
that's a very interesting statement, because we do have studies from an ophthalmological peer-reviewed Scandinavian a journal written in 2002 showing that in hunter-gatherer populations, only 2% of the young people had vision problems, whereas looking at a more modern populations, European and or Asian populations, we have up to 50% of children with vision problems.
We have a lot more stress in this country, and you know, when you're what, 5 years old, you start kindergarten. When you're what, 6 years old, you're in first grade. You know, just the education system, it's stressful for kids. You know, it's a big change. You know, also when parents divorce, it's hard on the kids. You know, they don't realize it, but a lot of times it stresses them out. It just gets them emotionally upset,